Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. We have got a great show for you today. It's the last weekend of January, but we have some beautiful weather going on. So if you have a chance to get out and about and enjoy some local food fun, you can do it. So first of all, food personality Carla Hall, a chef and co-host of The Chew, will be appearing at Market District in Carmel this afternoon. So we got her on the phone to talk about her latest cookbook and her career, and we work in some questions submitted via Facebook. Also this week, I've gotten out in the nice weather myself, and I headed to Lebanon to visit St. Adrian Meats and Sausage and to talk with the owner and butcher, Ryan West. We'll hear how he launched this old-school butcher shop located right on the Courthouse Square in Lebanon. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Market District in Carmel, that big, beautiful supermarket at 116th and Illinois Streets, just keeps bringing in food celebrities. Mark Summers, Mario Batali, and now Carla Hall. The TV personality, chef, and co-host of The Chew is in town today for a meet-and-greet event with her fans at Market District at 1 p.m. Fans of the stylish hall can pick up copies of her latest cookbook, Carla's Comfort Food, Favorite Dishes from Around the World. We got Carla on the phone to talk about cooking, writing, finding inspiration, and about that Thanksgiving bagel stuffing dish that Mario Batali told us about.
First, I have to ask you about the Thanksgiving dressing that you made with bagels. I talked with Mario Batali right before Thanksgiving, and he was raving about it. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. How'd the idea come up?
Well, the idea came from an organization that actually does food recovery. And so this career changer saw a need in the community with all of these people who are struggling with food insecurities. And so what he does is goes around and collects food from different restaurants. And a lot of times this food, if they had more food, it would be a bigger production. But for just the little bit that they have, nobody's going to do it. So
Right. What
he decided to do was to be that person who picks up, makes these rounds and picks up this food. And so he had some bagels. So my thought was, it's Thanksgiving, why not do a dressing and treat it like the everything bagel?
Sure.
So it was chicken stock and butter, and we toasted the bagels, and then I did a crumble of dill and sesame seeds and onions and eggs. And then we sprinkled that over the stuffing once it was cooked. It was delicious. I'm like, huh, you know, necessity is the mother of invention.
Well, it sounded great. And like I said, he was raving about it. So that's on the agenda for next holiday season is use some day-old bagels, you know, for the dressing. So I think it's great. So tell me a little bit about how ideas like that come to you. How do you, you know, take an ingredient and see what else it could be?
I think the thing is, and people would ask me about this when I did Top Chef, mm-hmm. and when you've been cooking a long time, it's almost like word association, except it's ingredient association.
Oh, that's great.
So if I have something, let's say somebody says, your secret ingredient is corn chips. And you're like, okay, it's corn. What goes with corn? And so that's when my head goes into this Rolodex in my head, like all the things that go with corn. You know, cumin, tomatoes, peppers,
sure.
spice. So and that's how it happens. And then you tend to go to different cuisines. You know, are you doing something Southern? Are you doing something that's Mexican? You know, what cuisines use corn, and how do those spices change? And that's how I think about things.
So does the ingredient then come first, or does some inspiration strike you typically?
I think the ingredient comes first, generally.
Well, tell me a little.
Unless I have something I think that's the first time that I had, speaking of Mario, the first time that I had his olive oil mashed potatoes.
My goodness.
Oh, you know, you're saying I wouldn't have thought about it. And I guess I did it with sweet potatoes, but then once you introduce olive oil in mashed potatoes and just the consistency, then it's like, what other things do you put in the olive oil? Is the olive oil flavored?
Oh, okay.
And how can you, you know, infuse herbs into the olive oil, which go into the potatoes? So in that case, it would be the idea.
Well, I love thinking about inspiration for dishes. And so now you are going to be here in Indianapolis this afternoon with your new cookbook, Carla's Comfort Food, Food Dishes from Around the World. You'll be at Market District in Carmel talking with people who can get copies of the book. So I wanted to hear just a little bit about the cookbook itself. And how do you gather the recipes, and how does a recipe make the cut?
Well, I started with an idea, and the idea was, and I started working on this cookbook in 2008.
Oh, my goodness.
During the presidential election, and that seems like a non sequitur, but we're going through it again right now. During an election year, everybody is focused on why somebody is different, and everybody is slamming people for their differences. And what I realized was that food is the one place we allow people to be different. We don't say East Indians, you should have less spices in your food. You should do your food like this because this is how we do it. You don't say to the Chinese, why do you do your dumplings like that? You should do them like this. We allow people to be different. So what I started to do was to explore what these differences were, but maybe I would take one ingredient and show how three different cuisines used that ingredient. So that was really my inspiration for the book. And I learned a lot about, you know, what other people eat, what those spices are, but also, you know, how so many things are similar in a lot of different cuisines, and we aren't as different as we think. Like, at this given moment, we could be saying, okay, we're going to do a chicken stew.
Sure.
There's probably somebody all over the world, at least in, I don't know, 50 different countries who are doing something, and the only thing that changes are the spices.
Oh, sure. Someone in one place thinks of it one way, and someone else has a different vision of that.
Right, exactly. And I think if we want to heal ourselves, race relations and with religion and sexuality, I think we can start with the fact that you allow people to be different with their food.
Oh, I love
that. And
then
you sort of inch out from there. So that was my inspiration for this book. And I love talking to people about food, just like you love talking about what somebody's inspiration was. It's like, you know, how can we truly allow people to be different and be okay with that?
Oh, that's fascinating. That's what a terrific concept and inspiration. How did you go about gathering the recipes that sort of reflect those ideas?
Well, I started with the South. So, I mean, I started with my experiences in food. And, for instance, we do chicken and, like, smothered chicken. So it's chicken in a gravy. And so what kind of gravy is it? So we use milk, and I may use thyme. And so I said, okay, if I take out the milk and I add sour cream and paprika, let's say, then it is a version of a Hungarian chicken.
Sure.
Or if I take out the milk and I add heavy cream and Dijon mustard and wine, it is a version of something that they may have in France. But at the end of the day, for me, they're all smothered chicken, but I'm borrowing from other cultures. So that's what I used something from my culture and my experiences, and then sort of tried to extrapolate and see how other cultures might change this dish.
Did you have any special favorites that appeared as you were doing your research and coming up with dishes, things that might still stand out?
One of my favorites was the callaloo, and that's the spinach chapter. My brother-in-law, who doesn't remember this, mind you, but I remember having callaloo from him. Callaloo is a type of green, but in the States you may use spinach or some kind of a bitter green. And then it has crab or it has smoked fish, and it might have bacon or something. Smoked fish and spinach and coconut milk. And so when I was doing this, I know I wanted to have ingredients that were approachable, that people could find.
Sure.
So I said, okay, we'll use crab. And whether you're on the East Coast or the West Coast or in the middle of the country, you use the crab that you can find. And then for the smokiness, I chose bacon. And so with the spinach, and the reason I love this particular recipe, because with those changes, I absolutely loved it. And I remember turning to the woman who helps me with testing the recipes, and she also is the writer for the cookbook, Genevieve Coe. I said, oh my gosh, this is so good. And we just started giggling because it was like, what a surprise to make these little changes. And maybe it's because my palate is very American. So to bring in the bacon, to bring in some of the sweetness of the crab, and then the freshness of the spinach and a little bit of acid. It was really, really delicious.
Did you enjoy the process of doing a cookbook?
I did. I do, but it's tough because when you're doing a cookbook, it's very clinical. So you can't just throw things in a pot because you have to make notes. And
sure.
So
you have to be able to reproduce it again and again. Right?
Yeah. So one of the things that I always found challenging, I want to follow my heart. So what I would do is have out spices and measured spices and salt and olive oil and these different things in little cups, so that it didn't interrupt my flow, so I could I could just throw things in the pot and then go and count the cups later.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Are there aspects of your career that you like more? Did you really like the cookbook? Do you like TV better? Do you like cooking, writing?
I think I love being on the chew. It was a complete surprise. And I love discovering things about food so that the other co-host, because we learn so much. Everybody brings something to the table. So we learn so much about somebody else's food perspective, and that will trigger something in yourself. And so that I just love. And I also realize a lot about myself in that I love theater. So for me, doing cooking classes or being on the chew sort of marries my love of food and theater. Well, it's like performance. So I've always loved teaching and trying to help somebody get to the best possible food that they can make.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, on the chew, you only have 5 minutes to do that. So I used to love doing cooking classes. But yeah, that's what I love the most.
We've been talking with food personality Carla Hall of ABC's The Chew. Stay with us for more from Carla here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. are a fan of local food in Indiana, I hope you follow me on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram as well, since these social media sites are great ways to stay in touch. We get some terrific conversations going on Facebook, and it's a quick way for me to find out what's on your mind. And this week, I wanted to know what you would ask chef and TV food celeb Carla Hall. Now, Carla is in town today and will be appearing at Market District in Carmel this afternoon. We got Carla on the phone before today's appearance, and I got the chance to ask a few questions from local fans, Joanna Hodges, Katie Williams, and Liz Joss, about working in the food biz, other careers she might have considered, and how she developed her signature style.
So we are back talking with Carla Hall, who will be at Market District in Carmel. And so right now we have a few questions from some readers who have submitted questions via Facebook. So here is one that I think is very applicable. So since eating is something that we all have to do, and since you do it, you know, as work on top of that, how do you not get exhausted with talking about it and working with it all the time? What keeps you balanced?
I think talking to people about food and people actually giving you ideas, because it is the thing that I love, I realize that I do it all the time. Once it's especially, I notice this more when I go to another city and I have to eat out because I'm not cooking.
Right.
And then, so I spend an enormous, a lot of time looking for the perfect restaurant and the buzzwords that I use to find that restaurant. After that meal, I'm already thinking about, where am I going to have for lunch? And then after lunch, I'm like, oh, well, what am I going to have for dinner? And it's in me. And I think it's just this passion. But I think the balance comes from pulling away, because a lot of times people think that I want to eat a lot of rich foods all the time, and I don't.
Right.
Sometimes I just want very simple, plain food.
Now, what are some of those buzzwords that you use to, you know, find some places to go as you're traveling around?
Well, when I look for, I usually go online and I look for the best restaurant in, and I'll pick a neighborhood. And some of the words are like a neighborhood gem, the local's favorite.
Right.
So I'm always looking for a place where not tourists necessarily go, but locals go, because I know if locals go there and they have kept this place in business, it's probably going to be good.
Exactly. So I hope you get a chance to get out and about while you're in Indianapolis.
So what should I have? I mean, what should I have in Carmel?
Well, my goodness. So Carmel is a small city just north of Indianapolis. So, but they kind of all run together. You know, of course, there's a restaurant in the store that you'll be appearing at. So of course you could try that. But you know, some of our newsmakers in the food world are in Indianapolis itself and downtown Indianapolis, and in some of our neighborhoods. Fletcher Place is such a big happening neighborhood in Indianapolis.
So you might
check that out. Our one of our food and wine best new chefs of the year has a restaurant in Fletcher Place called Milk Tooth, and that seems to be one that draws a lot of people in. And also there's a restaurant Bluebeard right across the street from that. That was a best new restaurant semifinalist a few years ago in the Beard Awards. And that brings up something else. You are going to be hosting the Beard Awards in Chicago in May. So I'm very excited about that.
Yes, I'm so excited. And I'm sharing that position with Ming Tsai, whom I adore. I'm so honored. I can't even tell you. I'm really honored. I presented one of the awards a couple of years ago, and then I did the books and I forgot.
Oh, the books and media. Media and books
awards. But with the cookbooks and everything that were in New York last year, I hosted that.
Right.
So I feel like this is the next big challenge to host the best chefs and all of those awards. So I'm excited.
Oh, well, we are looking forward to it. We'll be in Chicago to see that. So that'll be very fun. Well, okay. I have a couple more questions for you, again, from a reader. If you could choose a different profession outside of the food world, what would it be?
I would, theater. I love acting. Uh-huh. So that's one.
Did you act as a kid?
Crafts. I love doing things with my hands. So I've always said if money was no object and I didn't have to make money, because I don't think that I could make money, I would have a paper store. I would have a store where I'm selling paper and pencils and I love like crafty things. I love paper.
Cool.
So.
Oh, I love it to go in stationery stores and cards and things like that.
Yes, I love it.
Oh, how fun. Now, do you do much in the way of art or mm-hmm. did you do theater as a kid?
I did. I did theater from 12 to 17. And I also danced. So I danced in college. I still like to dance. I draw. And so hence the whole coloring book, what people are calling a craze.
Yes, the coloring
books. I've been doing it for a while. So I love that there are even more coloring book offerings now. So, I love all of that kind of stuff. I love to make jewelry. I love anything crafty to do with my hands.
Oh, I think that is so cool. Well, here's one last question for you, again from a reader. Now, you are known for your fashion sense, of course, as well as your food sense. How did you develop, that personal style?
You know, it just sort of comes. I love mixing prints. A lot of people think my style is a little eclectic, but I modeled for a couple of years in London and a little bit in Paris and Milan. When I say a little bit. So I think just my sense of color and textures, which I think I use also in food, I use in trying to find my style. And I, because of the Chu and because of the amazing stylists that they have, and I just sort of say, oh, I love mixing prints. And so they, I basically have these private shoppers.
Oh,
and
nice.
They bring in all of these clothes and I get to go through and find like, yes, I like this. I love this. And they put it together for me. I'm like, yes, this is the one. This feels like it just feeds my spirit. And that's kind of how I get dressed in the morning. Mario teases me all the time. He's like, Carla, are you changing your clothes? Like we're doing another show. And I'm like, yep. I said, one of the reasons I like doing this show is that I get to play dress up.
I mean, oh, that's great.
What girl doesn't?
I love that. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. I appreciate it. And I hope you enjoy your time in Indianapolis and Carmel.
Thanks again.
We've been talking with food personality chef and the Chu co-host, Carla Hall. To register for her meet and greet at Market District today, go to marketdistrict.com. For more information on Carla, go to carlahall.com. After all the snow that other parts of the country have had recently, I've been thinking a lot this week about how nice it is to get out and about this time of year. Now, I'm all for hunkering down and hibernating in front of a fire when the weather is really bad, but with this beautiful sunshine of the last few days, I have felt inspired to go out and maybe do a little bit more than is typical for late January. And for me, getting out and about usually means trying a new restaurant. As I've said before, we are in the midst of a restaurant renaissance in Indianapolis, so there's no shortage of new places to try. In fact, I am keeping a list of must-try restaurants on this show's companion website, eatdrinkindy.com, and the list there includes the global soul food of Mero in Fountain Square, as well as the authentic ramen of the recently opened Ramen Ray, located near 71st and Binford Boulevard. And if you check out a new local restaurant, be sure to let me know with a post on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram.
And if you need a little dining inspiration to take yourself out for dinner, check out all the possibilities at devourdowntown.org. Designed to offer restaurant deals in the middle of a traditionally slow time period, Restaurant Week promotions like Devour Downtown are a great way to get a taste of a new restaurant. Or maybe it's a reason to make a return trip to an old favorite. This year's Devour Downtown includes 90 restaurants that are all offering some sort of special dining deal. Many of them are $30 three-course menus, but you'll find some 2 for $35 dinners and even some 2 for 20 lunches. You can even find a pie and champagne option. For that one, check out the Froname Dessert Cafe menu. So you can check out all the menus at devourdowntown.org, and you can also find information on deals at other local attractions and hotels as well, in case you maybe want to make a weekend of it, since Devour Downtown does run through February 7th. And I will definitely be looking at menus to try to decide where to go too. But, you know, one thing I've been thinking about right now is making sure that I do get out and see what some of my favorite restaurants are up to. I tend to get caught up in trying to get to all the newest places, and goodness knows there are plenty of new spots to try, but I'm also trying to get back to other favorite ones. So last weekend, I went with one of the kids to the Loft restaurant at Trader's Point Creamery. They have a Winter in the Woods special going on right now through the end of this weekend. And at $38 a person for three courses, it was priced right. Because, you know, honestly, money is always a concern, so I have to be judicious about where I spend my dining dollars. But this special menu really was worth the price. Both the soup, which was wild rice and duck, and the salad, which was kale with black walnuts, pickled cranberries, and fromage blanc, were terrific. And we loved both of the entrees that we tried as well. Elk ossobuco and butter poached lobster and whitefish. Desserts were good too, and we especially liked the cardamom and orange scented rice pudding, which seemed perfect for this time of year. And what was especially nice about the meal was the service. Our server put a lot of effort into making sure we were happy with our wine choices, and we weren't even buying a whole bottle. We just ordered a glass of wine each, but our server brought out several samples to make sure we would really enjoy what we ordered. She made great suggestions, and we were both happy with our choices. It was so nice for someone to take that much time and effort for just a glass of wine. But you know, when a glass of wine is $9 or $10, after all, it's not insignificant. And I appreciate someone taking the time to make sure I was happy with my choices. And our server really seemed to enjoy making the suggestions and was pleased when she came up with ones we liked. Plus, we got to say hello to Chef Brandon Canfield, executive chef there at the Loft. So with the terrific menu, attentive service, and the always lovely setting there at Trader's Point Creamery, it was a great revisit. Just the kind of experience you want to have. All about local food here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, but it's easy, especially in winter, to feel that it's harder to eat local. But locally raised meats are available year-round and becoming much easier to find. You'll find locally raised meats and products at area farmers markets. Farms like Tyner Pond Farm have a delivery service, and other local delivery services carry meats as well. But it's still great to stop in at a butcher shop and pick out what you'll have for dinner, ask questions, and maybe discover a new product you hadn't even considered. St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana is an old-school butcher shop that's been open about a year and a half right on the Courthouse Square. Owner and butcher Ryan West tells us how he and his wife Amelia decided to open St. Adrian and how the butcher shop operates.
The shop idea was we like to eat, so we learned to cook. I think when you get better at that, you know, you just keep learning and doing a little bit more, and then it was kind of okay, well, how do I continue to get better, and kind of really looked at ingredients. Both my wife, Amelia, and I grew up rural farming and on the farm, and so we always had gardens and, you know, around livestock and those kinds of things. And so several years ago, we had a freezer, kind of a small freezer meat business. We were finishing a few pigs for ourselves. People never believe me, but if you're feeding one pig, it's just as easy to feed 10. So we had...
Oh, I don't know. It sounds like one of those, you know, we have to see it to believe it, right?
That's right. But we had extra, and so it was kind of friends and family. Hey, does anybody need pork for their freezer? And so that's really where it started.
And then when was that?
That would have been somewhere around like 2007-ish. All right. We moved to this area then, bought a small farm just because we liked that lifestyle. So for us, it was about obtaining the best quality stuff that we possibly could. We figured we'd just grow it ourselves. And so that kind of turned into a hobby. I love being outside and working with the animals anyway. We grow a big garden. We love summer at our house because we go to the store for the staples, you know, milk and bread kind of things. The rest of it, you know, we go shopping outside or in the freezer, it seems like. So
that's very cool. You know, I think that probably resonates with a lot of people. Probably people would like to do that.
I think so. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And so part of the idea with the shop here was, gosh, we love doing this. We were really pleased with the product quality and what we're having, what we eat on a regular and daily basis. I wonder if other people, you know, appreciate that. Kind of what you just said. Turns out, yeah, it does. And so we had kind of been thinking about the idea of it for a while, and finally got to the point where it was like, okay, we need to get serious and either cross this off and put it aside or move forward. And so here we are.
The idea of actually launching a butcher shop, you know, an old-fashioned kind of small-town butcher shop.
That's right. Yeah, old-fashioned small-town butcher shop. So everything we do, we make here.
Sausages, you fabricate the meats, and
that's right. Yeah, so you know, I mentioned the fact that we were growing some of the animals. We still do grow some of them, though we couldn't grow as many as what the shop's demand here is and what people want. So we buy the live animal. We buy it on the farm, usually. We take possession of it on the farm, and we have, you know, kind of a chain of custody from there until it goes in your bag and home with you, which is a very different model than anybody else.
It is. I'm you know, been sitting here trying to think about that, you know, and the fact that, you know, so you're picking up animals off of a farms, local farms, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was important. That was important to me, because when I look across the counter at a customer and I tell them that it's local, first of all, it's antibiotic-free, it's hormone-free, you know, it's been grown in the most natural way possible. I'm the responsible face. I am the face that they have a connection with. And so it's important for me to know where they come from, you know. And I can look at people and go, I know where this animal come from. I can take you there. We can look at it. You'll agree that it's, you know, pretty good and meets these criteria. So
now, what are your criteria?
Well, like I just mentioned, antibiotic, hormone-free, that's a necessity for us. We support modern agriculture in every way possible. It's important to feed the world. This is for maybe a more discerning palate, what we do here, a higher quality. So there are options, right? Everybody has preferences. That's what we're helping to provide. But it became clear to us that was something that customers are concerned with. I don't think we know whether how those things in animal and in the meat that they produce, how they're affecting us. We have no idea. And so it was easy for us to say, well, we're just going to go, we're going to go, you know, aside from that.
Now, how are the animals raised typically?
Yeah. So, just like that, all of our pigs, are free choice feed, so they do get grain whenever and however often they want. So we like happy pigs. We like to say that all the animals here that we offer have very good and happy lives, except for one day.
The one bad day, right?
The one bad day, and that's our goal. But they do have access to pasture and outside, and so that's important not only from a lot of customers' perspective of welfare and well caring and well being of animals, but then also it really does make a different tasting meat product.
People tend to talk about pork the way it used to taste, maybe that they remember from years ago, and not so taste less, maybe.
I think you hit it right on the head. There is chicken as well, right? A lot of chicken and pork have seemingly just over time become carriers for sauce or whatever you want to put on it. And we actually think those things taste good if they're done right and grown the right way. And that's part of what access to the dirt in pasture, does, is it just adds that flavor of, you are what you eat, and that certainly comes through. We're not afraid of the bad F word, and that's fat. So our pork tends to have just a little bit more. I mean, not a lot, but a little dab of the intramuscular fat goes a long way. Helps keep it moist. It helps give it that flavor. I've had a customer here and look at pork chops, and they look different. They're a deeper color. They're more rosy, a darker red color. And I think, well, I don't know if that looks like pork. And I'm like, actually, this looks like pork, So it is interesting to see people's perception and how they view things differently. We're kind of bringing back that old school, old way of doing things, I think, a little bit. And we did it that way partially, I think, in the past because we didn't know any better, right? And technology evolves, and so you try different things. Sometimes that it's not right, though. It's just not. It's not what produces the best product. And so we think that we're on to something here, and many other people are too. But we're glad to be a part of that.
So what has the response been from customers in general? Positive overall?
Yeah, very very positive. Today already. So I can include today along with every other day that we've been open for the last year and a half. Every day that we've been here, we have at least one new person every day that says, well, I haven't been in yet. So that's, that's still growing. I think there are a lot of trends in food a lot of times, and things come in and go out of vogue. One thing that I think is here to stay, and that's the local kind of farm to fork, farm fresh movement. I think part of that is because you can taste fresh. People go, well, they say it tastes different. Well, how? And I'm like, it's that, sixth sense, like the one you can't explain, but it's kind of like, if you ever buy your own coffee beans whole and grind them yourself. I mean, the pre-ground stuff is coffee too, but there's a something extra special, sort of at the end of when you do it yourself.
We've been talking with Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. Stay with us for more from Ryan here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Local tastes, especially in the portion of the plate devoted to protein, you might think folks in central Indiana would be pretty predictable. But it's interesting how adventurous they can be and what products pique their interest. So it was great to talk with Ryan West recently, owner and butcher at St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. Ryan tells us not only how the butcher shop got started and who St. Adrian is, but also about the unusual requests he gets and just how popular rabbit sausage really is. So here we are at St. Adrian Meats in Lebanon. Now, tell me a little bit about the name of the business, for one thing, and maybe about how it got started.
So we come up with the name. St. Adrian is the patron saint of butchers. So it seemed like a good fit. We looked around. We were deciding, does it make sense? Is it right to actually put a physical location? A lot of people were saying, start at farmers markets. You can do that first. It's an easy way in. Well, I've never been one to take the easy way about anything. And if it's not difficult enough, I tend to make it that way. So, it seemed to me like, if it's a good idea and people are ready for this product and what we offer, then we need kind of a home base of operation. We make a lot of stuff. Everything that we have in the shop, we make on site. So we buy the live animal off the farm. It actually goes up to Lafayette to a small processor who does the dirty work, I say, for us. And then the whole carcass comes back to us here.
So you get the whole pig?
We get the whole pig, the whole cow,
the whole cow. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Right here.
Right here. Yeah. So we, I tell everyone, we cut, cure, chop, grind, stuff, smoke, everything right here. So that gives us so much flexibility to be able to get a customer anything they want. I mean, if you can think of it, we can do it, and we get some interesting requests sometimes. So, but it's good. We take customer requests for different sausages. In fact, some of our more popular sausages have been ones that customers have requested.
But that's kind of cool. What kind of thing?
Yeah, one that immediately jumps out is called Czech sausage. We've got a guy here who lives locally who said, I grew up in Central Texas. There's a big Czech community. Gosh, you could get it at gas stations. You could get it cooked. It was in restaurants. It was everywhere. Czech sausage. Do you think you can make some? And I said, absolutely. You just have to help us get it right at the end of the day. And so we do all kinds of research and come up with Czech sausage. It's a smoked sausage, kind of peppery, a little garlicky. And, boy, people just, it took off, you know. My wife said, I don't know what Czech sausage is, but this is some pretty daggum good smoked sausage. And I said, yeah, that's, you know, it is. You're right. So we do all kinds of things like that to meet what people want.
So, you know, unusual cuts and that sort of thing, people can ask for that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there, you know, few people understand really when you get down into the intricate details of what makes a cut of meat. You know, you can take the same kind of primal big chunk of meat and cut it 100 different ways, and it's 100 different things. And so we kind of have the standard type things, you know, that a lot of people are familiar with and see. But we get people all the time who, you know, I was in Argentina and they cut this way. Do you think you could do that? And I'm like, I think I can do just about anything. So as long as we haven't used it already, there are some real benefits. Obviously, as we've been talking about, to buying local, the quality you just can't surpass. We dry age all the beef. Even what goes into the ground beef as a dry aged product, I don't know of anywhere else that does anything like that. It makes the logistics a little more challenging, but you know, I tell people there's only so much filet in a cow. So when you're buying local and spending money, you know, with local farmers and buying their product, we've got to use the whole thing. So there are some challenges.
How do you do that? How do you make sure you use up all the parts? I know that's something that's a problem chefs face, you know, and, you know, like you said, there's only so much filet, but there's a lot of ground beef, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've kind of taken a multifaceted approach to that to some degree. We work with probably 7 or 8 different restaurants, all the way from a very small private club in Indianapolis to a new pizzeria, Empire Pizzeria up in Kirkland. and a few here in town, the Milky Way, and some in Zionsville. So, you know, that's a great outlet for us to move some of those ground type products, chorizo, sausages, those kinds of things. That certainly helps. On the other side, we realize that there's only so many ribeyes. There's only so much filet. And so our customers are recognizing that too. And they understand, okay, I'm getting what that means, that I might not always walk in and get exactly what I want. Whatever I get, it's going to be pretty good. And we'll take some suggestions, those kinds of things. We keep a list of people that, hey, when we get the next beef in, when we get the next lamb in, we'll call you and let you know that, you know, fillets are ready. It'll be here on Thursday, you know, kind of a thing. And so, both of those approaches really help us to meet those needs.
That's really nice, you know. What are some of the more unusual cuts that you might have occasionally that people might not be as familiar with?
Well, gosh, that could go a lot of different ways, I suppose. In sausages, at least, we always try to have things that are very familiar, like breakfast sausage or bratwurst. We do what I call some old world sausages, you know, very, very traditional, standard, you know, milk, eggs. Those are the binders. We don't use anything else. As well as some more contemporary types of sausage, like we have a Thai green curry sausage or buffalo chicken, you know, and so just some random things like that. But those are kind of always changing, and so people love to come and just, you know, that I offer to people all the time, hey, you can call ahead, we'll get your order ready. That way, you know, we can make it. We're already asking people to make an extra stop, so we want to help them along. We know it's a fast-paced world, but people are like, I kind of want to look around and see what you have. I tell you, the strangest thing I ever did was a lady from down south, Louisiana, said there's a dish called debris, or griot, it's called, and it's basically all the bits that nobody else is interested in that kind of go together. I mean, suet, tripe, and, you know, glands of different sorts and pancreas. I mean, it was a wild menagerie of things, and I'm pretty adventurous, but I don't even, that one might have even been a little strong for me, so.
Well, you know, I see a lot of things, you know, like lingua tacos, you know, like tongue tacos, you know, things like that on chef menus, or sweetbreads. Mm-hmm. I just, as a matter of fact, just this past weekend had sweetbread tacos and lingua tacos. Are those sorts of options available?
Absolutely, yeah. We beef tongue is I think probably a little more familiar, but we always have pork tongue as well. Might even be my favorite out of the two, and I like both of them quite a bit. We just had some folks in earlier today who picked up pig's cheeks. You know, the cheeks are pretty incredible. Some people are turned off by the notion, but I'm like, we're okay with the rest of it. There's, you know, like, this isn't even, you know, organ meat in any kind of way. Like, this is just good is what this is. But oxtail is a really good one. What's interesting to kind of see is, you know, I'm a fan of cooking and eating anyway. And so you do some research and those kinds of things, where I grew up in a very down home kind of family where we ate those kinds of things. You know, if you put that in your freezer, well, you got to use it all, right? So it's some of the old stuff, old recipes are kind of, you know, becoming new again. And so it's interesting. Oxtail is a great example of that.
I love that. You know, I grew up, you know, with the chicken gizzards, you know, and liver and that sort of thing. But, you know, those aren't nearly as common anymore, you know, and oftentimes I'm not sure that you can even usually, you know, get those things at supermarkets regularly. So I think it's kind of cool that you can, you know, and that you can, you know, try some of those more traditional recipes.
Yeah, we, you know, everything from, you know, another really rare one to see is beef ribs. I mean, whole beef ribs, you know, not short ribs, even though short ribs are kind of hard to find sometimes. But the whole thing, you know, a customer was just asking me the other day about, we used to do whole beef ribs. No, there's not a lot of meat until you get to the end, but they were sure fun and they looked good, you know, and they were great. And I said, well, yeah, if you let us know, we can absolutely do that. So there are a lot of those different kinds of things.
I think that's very cool. I think it's very interesting. And, you know, somebody who likes to cook, you know, that it's fun, you know, mm-hmm. to try some of those different cuts. Any other types of things people might not be as familiar with?
We regularly we have rabbit. Here we just brought some goat in. We've had a few customers ask for it because they've traveled, because they've experienced something, because they've watched, you know, one of the many popular cooking shows now where they've seen this stuff, and so we actually brought one of those in. I have figured out with both of those things. We had whole rabbit here for a while. We offered to cut it down for people, and people would come. Not frequently, but somewhat regularly, people would get a whole rabbit. We made sausage out of rabbits, and we couldn't make it fast enough.
Oh, now that's interesting.
So I think there's a. I think when it's kind of pre-made, pre-spiced a little bit. So we did the same thing with the goat, and it's actually people are willing and ready to try it. So I think we've learned that people are willing to try different things and new things. You just have to give it to them, you know, offer it in a form that they're willing to try.
We've been talking with Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. The shop is located at 110 West Washington Street, right on the Courthouse Square, or check out stadrianmeat.com. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in and spending some time talking food with us today. And thanks also to our guests this week. Food personality, chef, cookbook author, and co-host of The Chew, Carla Hall. And local butcher and owner of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Ryan West. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.